Hi, this is John Richardson. Today is Tuesday, the 29th of December. This is one more of my ongoing series of podcasts of all things of interest to Americans abroad, green card holders, and people all over the world who are interested in keeping their assets intact. And a couple of days ago, I came across an amazing article in the Wall Street Journal. The title of the article is A California Plan to Chase Away the Rich. That's the first part. And then keep on stalking them once they've left. And it was a captivating article written by Mr. Hank Adler, who I have now met and is a professor teacher at Chapman University, where he teaches tax, accounting, and all these things that would give him special insight into the mechanisms that these governments go and the lengths that they go to, in fact, chase people away and keep on stalking them. So thank you so much for chatting with me today, Hank. How are you?
Always good. Pleased to be here. It's a sunny day in Southern California.
Okay, well, that's because it's still day there. It's evening in Toronto, Canada, but it's been actually a beautiful, clear day here. Well, first of all, thanks very much for your article. It was incredibly interesting because, as we were chatting earlier, these governments are, one, desperate for funds and basically are going to stop at no lengths to try to get those funds. So what are we going to, we'll actually perhaps use the title to break our discussion down a little bit. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on taxation in California and why it is creating incentives to leave the state.
Well, we're, you know, the highest tax state, trying to become the absolute highest tax state. You know, California, huge social programs, you know, decades of growing the promises to government workers with respect to pensions. And the state needs a fortune to keep going. And of course, we tend to spend the money on things that we don't need. So the state has a need for funds, which they can't keep up with. So we're seeing proposal after proposal after proposal, which is, you know, my article was about a proposal, the wealth tax proposal that we'll talk about at length. But they're seeking all methodologies of trying to raise money. And something you and I didn't chat about, you know, before we turned on the recorder, there are really two things going on. One, an insatiable need for cash. But I think also from the, you know, from our elected leaders, is some goal and objective to just punish the rich. You know, when some of these dollar amounts that they're talking about from some of these proposals really will hurt the rich, but not be significant enough to impact all the issues of the state. So it's crazy times out here.
And of course, provide huge incentives for people to want to sever tax residency with California.
Oh, I, you know, I haven't practiced now for, 18 years. I still get, I would say, two or three calls a month from former clients and friends. And, hi, Hank, how are you? It's been a long time. How do I get out of this place? How do I become a resident of another state, but I still want to be able to have certain assets in the state of California and come see my grandkids? And if I'm getting a couple calls a month and I don't practice, it's pretty easy to understand that there are, you know, probably thousands of California residents thinking of leaving. And now, you know, as we've read on the paper, you know, we have huge players moving out of California to Texas. You know, we lost HP. Elon Musk is moving his operations. And a couple of weeks don't go by where we don't see another major employer leaving. So it's a, these are serious issues for the state long term.
Why do they not, why do these politicians not address this? I mean, you know, immigration as a general principle is based on trying to maintain a tax base or increase it. It's important for so many, you know, for governments everywhere. And yet what they do is they essentially create these policies that are just designed to get people out, to get them to leave. Why do they not see this?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's much discussion that takes place with these bills. I think somebody comes up with an idea and it goes to committee, and the committees never really sit early on to discuss what they're doing and what the impacts are. I sat through the discussions on this wealth tax proposal. You know, as I told you earlier, it needs to be reintroduced, and it's been promised to be reintroduced in the spring. And the hearings went like this. There was a table that had, it looked to me, I watched them, you know, just like we are now on Zoom, looked like it sat 12 or 16 people. There was the Democratic chair of the committee, and there was the Republican subchair, or whatever his title is, and all the rest of the seats were empty. One or two people came and left during the meeting. But this was the first hearing on something as spectacular as a 0.004% wealth tax. And the way it worked was they had two people in favor and two people against. And they were each given 5 minutes to talk about this monumental change in the tax law. And the two gentlemen for the against the bill, actually, I thought did a pretty commendable job. And they had a professor from Berkeley was one of the speakers in favor of the bill. And then an individual who ran a nonprofit didn't know anything about the bill. She just said she needed the money to run her nonprofit. And then they took phone calls, because we're now a Zoom world. And most of the phone calls went as follows. Hi, this is Bill Smith. I represent Union XYZ, and we're in favor. Click. And that's the way it went for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So there wasn't a moment of discussion. There were only two people there to have the discussion, but there wasn't a moment of discussion. And I think that's the way California runs. And as the new legislature comes in the spring, there will not be a single CPA or financial advisor in the legislature.
That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. Now, unfortunately, this is, I think, generally how laws are made now, not only in California, but federally. And, you know, and sometimes they just, for example, this, you know, this latest COVID relief bill, if it's called that, you know, does all kinds of other things, right? You know, kind of diverting the focus.
You know, I think somewhere is buried in that bill is $10 billion for Pakistani gender studies.
Yes, and only, and you know, I mean, I agree with President Trump on this, actually, that, you know, the process is, which is what he's really saying, is that the process itself is suspect. You know, that this is, in fact, nothing to do with COVID relief, and, you know, using the excuse of a bill for COVID relief to get in all these other kinds of, I wouldn't even call them interests, I would call them desires, projects. Well,
the lack of targetness, if that's a word. In that bill, you know, to think that Bob, who has received 100% of his salary during the period of COVID, now whether he was in private industry or was with the government, is going to get a $2,000 check at the same time that Tom or Mary gets a $2,000 check and hasn't worked for 3 months, just strikes at a system that's not working.
Terrible. Well, you know, I've got to tell you, this is going on in Canada too. They're just sort of indiscriminately sending out money. Big problem. Right. So what we're moving into is a world, it seems to me, where taxation is becoming, it still includes income, but it now includes taxes based on non-realization events, non-income realization events, you know, AKA wealth taxes. So before we talk specifically about this California suggestion, what are your thoughts on wealth taxes in general? Constitutional, unconstitutional, good tax policy, bad tax policy?
Well, I think it's horrible policy. But from a federal standpoint, you know, and there are two views on this, I think it's clearly unconstitutional. You know, and since we have a Canadian audience here, the United States was unable to tax income until the 16th Amendment in 1913. because our Constitution provides that taxes, other than at that point in time, taxes on exports and the like, had to be paid on an allocable basis based on the percentage of people in the individual states. So we get to the 16th Amendment, we get to 1913, the government had lost a case called Pollock. And so they passed the 16th Amendment to say we could have an income tax. But it does, it, you know, clearly states that any other taxes are not constitutional. Now, there are some people who believe, and they're well-known, respected academicians, I disagree with them all, who say we're past that and we really can do it. But I would say, you know, my view would be, particularly with the current Supreme Court, wealth tax wouldn't possibly stand up. But United States, these states are generally sovereign institutions with respect to a lot of the parts of their activities. And at least in California, experts that I know and from my reading of the Constitution, a wealth tax in California is probably okay for California citizens.
Okay, now let's pause there for a minute, because the focus of your article in the Wall Street Journal, the thing that really caught my attention on this was the fact that this wealth tax that they're proposing is actually intentionally designed to go after people who cease being residents of the state of California on assets that have nothing to do with the state of California, that were acquired possibly after they moved from the state of California. I mean, this reminds me very much, we're not going to talk about this in this podcast, but this reminds me very much of how the United States taxes Americans abroad. Let's talk about the scope of this thing. And if I can add, I think I'm right in saying that it goes beyond what is currently statutory tax residency in California by trying to impose this tax on anybody who spent 60 days in a calendar year in California. Have I got that right?
Yeah, let's see if we can piece it together part by part. And when I said that, you know, people I talk to believe that the wealth tax in California would be constitutional, I was not saying that all parts of this proposal would be constitutional. So they have these individual parts in this bill. Let's start with the 60-day rule that says if I spend 60 days in California, I'm going to be deemed a part-year resident. When I'm deemed a part-year resident, I'm going to be subject to the wealth tax on some percentage basis. So, you know, we have, you know, 90 miles or 130 miles, something like that, from where I sit. We have Palm Desert that has thousands, probably tens of thousands of Canadians who come down for the winter. And should they stay in their homes for 60 days, they would become subject to the wealth tax. Now, remember, the wealth tax doesn't kick in until you're worth $30 million. But there are lots of those people that are worth $30 million. I think there are anyway. So we have, first, we have the 60-day rule. And then we have, And that might be interesting from a constitutional basis. It might have a significant chance of being successful with that because you were physically in the state. The second one that just you mentioned and people just their eyes glaze over is it provides that once I become a part-year resident or a full-time resident, that I would have a 10-year tail on paying the wealth tax. So, for example, I'm a Saudi prince and I go to Chapman University. Obviously, I'm in town more than 60 days. I'm a full-time resident of California for a year. This law would provide for the ensuing 10 years after you leave that you would be subject to a wealth tax. That would be 100% the first year and 90% the second year, et cetera. I just can't imagine that that would be constitutional, that I can
tax. This is a wealth tax based on, we have the Saudi prince, Okay, it will be based on assets in Saudi Arabia.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's impossible.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you literally could do stand-up comedy because I have on this. You know, dear Saudi prince who's been gone for 10 years, you know, what's your share of the Saudi wealth? You know, a dollar. You know, it would be in some aspects impossible to deal with, and getting the information would be impossible, and people would just not pay it. I mean, the number of people who would conform to that law would, in my judgment, be tiny. Now, California has a tremendous reach in the United States. They have offices all over the country. But try and get people to show up at their meetings or, you know, certainly overseas, you know, they wouldn't have a prayer of collecting it, but it is what the law says.
You know, it was 2019, so the Toronto Raptors, the Golden State Warriors, and won the NBA championship. And this was, you know, I was at the Raptors home opener in 1993, so this is a big event. Immediately after they won the NBA championship, the discussion immediately shifted to Kawhi Leonard and, you know, where was he going to play next? And I remember there was a fascinating discussion in one of the tax journals about, you know, the difference between tax residency in Ontario versus California. Well, if this were to take effect, I mean, do you think any high-paid professional athlete would want to go to play for a California team?
Oh, I think it goes further than that. I'm a big UCLA guy. And, you know, if you were the number one quarterback in the United States and you were planning, as most of them do, of spending 3 years in California, 3 years subject to the cap and then being a free agent in year seven, yeah, I might choose a different school. Getting more to your, to what you were talking about, you know, picture the guy going to Stanford, in chemical engineering or in some technology sector, you know, where we know that, you know, Bob, as I always like to refer to them, is going to go to Stanford. He's going to spend 4 years at Stanford, and then he's going to be the highest expert in some form of technology in the world. And he's going to go out and form a company and be rich. Read this law for the 10 years after he leaves California. If he does, in fact, create that IPO, and God knows we have a lot of really rich young people living in California, they would be subject to the wealth tax. So it would even hurt recruiting.
I would think that everybody would want to steer clear of California, period. I mean,
for a host of non-tax reasons.
Right.
For a host of non-tax reasons. I mean, you know, we're a third world country in some parts of the state today. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Well, this is of course, the inequality discussion, I suppose. And this is who is this professor at Berkeley, this wealth professor?
Well, there are two economics professors up there, exceptionally bright guys, educated in Europe. I don't know their first names, but it's Zuckman and Zayez. And, you know, they're pretty much involved both at the local level, and they were involved deeply. I think they wrote Elizabeth Warren's plans, now probably a year ago. Bright guys. I told you earlier, they'll answer an email in 2 minutes. But I don't think they have. There's a cultural deal here. For all I know, they might have been behind the wealth tax that failed in France. I do not know. but I don't think they understand our system and culture, and therefore this makes sense to them.
Well, I think it probably makes sense to anybody who, you know, has a gold-plated pension and doesn't have to worry about any of these problems. I think that where it becomes, you know, very difficult is, the people who may actually have to pay this. And
yeah, I don't think there's an understanding of liquidity amongst the wealthy. you know, as I say in the article, Zuckerberg's share of the first year tax would be $400 million. So to get the $400 million, he would obviously have to sell shares. So it's, you know, it's an $800 million problem for him in year one. That means he has to sell stock.
Well,
he doesn't have $800 million of nickels and dimes.
Yeah, it's about confiscation, and another, and you know, you can call it confiscation. Some people may not like the term, but we can politely say it forces the erosion of assets.
Yeah, and probably would, you know, with respect to some of, you know, some of these individuals and companies, it would begin to affect the stock values of those companies, and therefore it would roll into the valuation of portfolios that pay pensions. I mean, everything is connected. So it's, you know, this is dangerous stuff, but it's more dangerous in California. You know, I have never done any work or met Elon Musk, but they've been hassling him about a handful of things over the years. And he just picks up and leaves. Over time, his employees are going to be in Texas. And I think it's Ellison has now moved to Lanai, which I guess he owns in Hawaii. Jobs start to disappear. You start driving out those high income individuals, and it doesn't bode well long run for the economics of the state.
No, it clearly does. I mean, you know, it's never good to drive productive people away. You know, you would think that rationally they would have tax policies that would encourage people to want to live in California.
Yeah, one would think, but one would be wrong.
What about the compliance on this? You know, part of your article that I found interesting was the discussion of how difficult and expensive it would be to comply with this sort of law.
Well, yeah, you know, the example I use is, you know, it doesn't start till the individual has $30 million of net worth. But I would also
say that's today.
That's, yeah, I was going to say it's today. You know, once you've got it in place, you can take it down without very much trouble, and you can increase this rate.
Sure.
So, you know, you start with my $31 million guy, and he's got a $40,000 tax. It was not going to affect his life, but he's probably going to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars on appraisals to prove that it's only $31 million.
So one of the things that's interesting about the way the law is written is that it specifically references the estate tax provisions of the Internal Revenue Code. And that is trouble, because that means problems in valuing assets and treatment of, you know, strange treatment of joint assets, you know, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the estate tax is always been interesting. It's, you know, if you think about what we talked about a few minutes ago, you say, wait a minute, you know, didn't Hank Adler just say that we can only tax income under the 16th Amendment? And there's a Supreme Court case that goes back, got 100 years now, that describes the estate tax as a tax on the transfer of assets from the decedent to whoever the beneficiaries are. And that is, in some ways, one of the more interesting areas of the law to practice in. It's not my primary area, never was, but I've done a lot of negotiations. Determining fair market value is incredibly difficult. Knowing what a business is worth when it is not publicly held, lots of methodologies, lots of discussions, but lots of issues.
And lots of discounts, right, for things like lack of control.
Well, not in this bill. It just like the bill, the national bill specifically, it says that for convenience or words to that effect, there won't be discounts. So that if I own 10% of X, I'm just going to take 10% of the fair market value of X.
But you've still got,
which is a nightmare,
what the fair market value is.
Well, that and, you know, if you own a small percentage of something, it's not worth that percentage of the whole if somebody else controls it. Just pure economics. So the estate tax has always been a negotiation as opposed to the precision of perhaps the income tax code.
So what do you think perceive as the general consciousness of people in California about this? I mean, is this saleable to the man on the street, or?
I you know, to the man on the street, I wouldn't want to see it as a proposition on the ballot, because people want, you know, there is, you know, as I said earlier, you know, there's this goal and objective to provide enough revenues, but there's this simultaneous goal and objective to punish the rich a little bit, maybe a lot. The response to the article, you know, as you know, I've written a lot, has been phenomenal in terms of numbers, in terms of who became interested in this.
Great article.
No, thank you. So I think there is certainly, you know, the word is out that this is a problem. You know, where that will go, I don't know. I'm pessimistic in the sense that, you know, in California with, you know, X number of signatures, you can put anything on the ballot. And 0.004 sounds like a very small amount of money. But nobody has the liquidity to do it. And if I can leave the state to avoid it, it's going to happen. It is, you know, going back to your question earlier and my response, it is just not unusual for a big California player to be looking down the road a couple of years and saying, you know, I'm going to sell that company. I think I'm going to leave for a while. And leaving in California means you really have to leave if you're not going to fight with the state. So you have to sell your house and give up your lunch club and make sure your veterinarian's in another state. And we all have lists like that. You know, some people who are leaving are playing precisely by the rules, so they won't get caught up by California claiming they're still residents. That's going on already. That's been going on for years. I moved, now it's 20 years ago, I moved a guy who was doing a huge, huge sale of a company, probably 20 years ago. And we played to the max on being conservative. So if he came to town, he stayed in a hotel. And we did fine on the audit. You know, some people are not being as pure when they're leaving. But the answer is, yeah, if you're looking ahead and you're looking, you know, California doesn't have a capital gains tax. So if you're looking at a 13.3% state rate and a 20% California rate, you say, geez, you know, I can get rid of a third of my taxes if I leave California. I'll miss it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is becoming, you know, a bigger and bigger problem. Now, from outside the United States, I see this, you know, as a variant of the exit taxes that various countries are imposing. For example, if somebody moves from Canada, there's a deemed disposition of their assets, you know, et cetera. If somebody were to move from Australia, same thing. And of course, if you move from the United States, or if you sever, well, not move, but if you, well, if a green card holder moves and abandons the green card they have out of a citizen, they'd have to abandon citizenship. We've got this this trend in the world towards these exit taxes. And what are your thoughts on, first of all, I mean, do you see this having to pay a 10% wealth tax as an exit tax?
Yeah, I think that's as good a definition as any. I don't believe, and I can't give you a verse on this. I don't think in the organization of the United States that that's an enforceable tax, leaving a state.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it's been a while since I was reading those codes. There are laws against the states individually having deals with themselves over taxes and the like. I just don't think California has the ability to go after somebody who moves to Nevada for a wealth tax. Mm-hmm. But that would be litigated. That was what I expected to listen to when I listened to the committee hearings. I expected an intellectual discussion where they'd say, well, here are the issues and here are the lawyers who think it's okay.
You ought to send your students to the next meeting.
Yeah, it's in Sacramento. It's a long way away.
Zoom?
I'm hoping the next time that they have that meeting that they might have read my article and call me.
That would be very, very good. No question about it. Tell me, if a high net worth person severs tax residency with California, is an audit guaranteed?
They're going to try to find them. I'm not sure that I know the percentage, but I know they're very aggressive. Now, do they go after 80% or 90%?
Oh, I know they're aggressive too, because I have helped people sever tax residency with California.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I do get these calls from time to time, which is interesting.
Yeah, I know they're very aggressive. You know, I don't know how big their staff is. Anyway, it's been years and years since I was, you know, it's been 18 years since I practiced. But I presume that, you know, if I was the organizer of the California Franchise Tax Board, the chairman, that I would want my people to pursue people who last year paid us a lot of tax and this year are not. So I assume they're doing that. They're not stupid.
No, that's the basis of the federal expatriation tax, right? I mean, you know, it applies to people who basically they think have money, for whether they paid a lot of tax or not. Well, this has been absolutely fantastic, and I thank you so much for joining me today. For listeners, here's the article. Here's how to find it, and I absolutely commend it to you along with the comments. It's called A California Plan. Chase away the rich, which they're clearly doing, and then keep right on stalking them, which that's what this proposed tax is about. And I'm pleased to note also that, actually, I'm going to read the intro paragraph to this article because of the way it ends. It says, California's legislature is considering a wealth tax on residents, part-year residents, and any person who spends more than 60 days inside the state's borders in a single year. Even those who move out of state would continue to be subject to the tax for a decade, a provision that calls to mind the Eagles' famous Hotel California lyric, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And it actually even gets better from the first paragraph. So the author is Hank Adler. He's a teacher professor at Chapman University, and you will find this, December 18th, 2020 in the Wall Street Journal. It's a great article. Thank you so much for joining me today, Hank, and perhaps we can pick this up with another topic soon.
Good, I'd love to. I appreciate the time, and it's been fun.
Absolutely.